It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 46 degrees under a foggy mist. Out at the airport, they are down to 4 miles of visibility. They have northwest winds at 6 miles per hour. Rain is likely until early this afternoon. Cloudy skies today with a high near 49, east winds to 10. Chance of rain this evening, followed by scattered showers, mostly cloudy overnight, low of 40, north winds to 5. And rain is likely tomorrow, at least in the early afternoon, with northwest winds to 10. The good news is sunny skies on Wednesday and Thursday, mostly sunny for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, it's the Kuskokwim 300, or the K300, to mushers in the know. It's National Wildlife Refuge Week. And Anchorage plans for a better snow season than last year's rather disastrous one. Those stories and more after these national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A short time ago in Tel Aviv, air raid sirens rang out, disrupting high-level meetings between Israel and the U.S. over Israel's war against the Palestinian militant group Hamas, according to State Department spokesman Matthew Miller. NPR's Michelle Kellerman's in Tel Aviv.
Secretary Blinken met twice today with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The second time was here in Tel Aviv on the grounds of the defense ministry, and they were meeting in the prime minister's office here, not only with Netanyahu, but also with what he calls his war cabinet. And that's when the air raid sirens went off. They had to shelter in a bunker for 5 minutes, we're told, by the State Department. That's all of them, with the prime minister and the cabinet. And they have since moved to a command center in the main building to continue discussions.
NPR's Michelle Kellerman reporting air raid sirens went off multiple times, underscoring the constant threat of Hamas rocket attacks and retaliatory Israeli airstrikes on Gaza since the latest war began October 7th. NPR's Aya Batraoui is following the growing humanitarian crisis inside Gaza.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says most of its shelters in Gaza have run out of clean water. Shops have run out of bottled water, and people's water tanks have emptied. Some families in Gaza are now drinking contaminated water and even seawater. Doctors Without Borders says hospitals have also run out of painkillers. It says the wounded, many of them children, are left screaming in pain. The UN humanitarian organization says hospitals only have a few hours of fuel left for generators. The organization's chief, Martin Griffiths, says the specter of death is hanging over Gaza. Aya Batraoui, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Gaza officials say more than 2,700 people have died in Israeli strikes. In Israel, the death toll from Hamas attacks has reached at least 1,300. Microsoft-owned LinkedIn says it is now laying off nearly 700 employees in the company's second round of staff cuts this year. NPR's Bobby Allen reports it comes as demand for hiring services slows.
There are fewer workers searching for new jobs and also a smaller number of companies looking to hire, and that has hit LinkedIn's bottom line. The company plans to lay off 668 employees across teams including engineering and finance. It represents only 3% of LinkedIn's total staff, but it is the second such cut this year. It is also a sign that the tech industry's downsizing since the height of the pandemic is continuing. According to tech industry job tracker layoffs.fyi, nearly 250,000 tech workers have been laid off this year, already 50% more tech job losses than last year's total. Despite trimming its staff, LinkedIn says it's earned more money and expanded its services since being acquired by Microsoft in 2016. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
It's NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kuskokwim 300 is better known as the K300 to mushers and their fans. This will be the 45th running of the premier middle distance sled dog race in the world, spanning 300 miles of traditional trails along the Kuskokwim River. And now the race date is set for late January 2024. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello reports registration is now open, but mushers need to hurry up if they plan to compete. There are only a few spots left.
Registration for the premier middle-distance sled dog race is open. On Monday, registration opened for the 45th annual Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race.
And we've had a really exciting response. The first few days of registration are always pretty busy, but we're at, I think, 22 teams signed up right now, which is, as far as I know, the biggest first week of registration we've had. And as always, lots of great teams going to be here for the race.
That's Paul Basil, and he's the K300 race manager. It's his fifth year in that position. According to the website, the 2024 K300 is scheduled to kick off on Friday, January 26, and spans 300 miles of traditional trails along the Kuskokwim River, from Bethel to Aniak and back. Basil says that for the most part, it's a lot of the usual suspects that fans can expect to see, but he is pleasantly surprised by the new faces we will see compete. There are currently 23 teams signed up. So who are they?
We have a young musher named Hunter Keefe, who did well in the Iditarod last year. He's a 23-year-old guy, and he's going to come out here and race for the first time. Another newcomer to the K300 is a guy named Joe Taylor, who I think is from Fairbanks. Jeff King is going to be back. He's not been here the last couple of years and has been racing less in recent years, but that's really exciting that he's going to be back.
Jeff King is a 9-time winner of the race. The first person to sign up was Iditarod and K300 veteran Travis Beals, whose top finish was 4th place in 2022. Norwegian Ed Winstrup Peterson raced in the 2022 Kobuk 440, but this will be his first K300. Jesse Holmes signed up. Holmes placed 3rd the last time he ran the K300 back in 2019. He's also a 2-time Kobuk 440 champ and placed 5th in the 2023 Iditarod. And then there are others who are household names in the YK Delta.
Yeah, and several past champions. Of course, Pete Kaiser, Richie Deal, Matt Fahler, Brent Sass is going to be back. So, yeah, as I said, it's, as always, a lot of the best in the business are going to be here, and it's going to be a really great race.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot. There's this guy named Raymond Alexi who signed up.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Raymond. That is really exciting. You know, he was at the end of last season, and specifically I remember at the finish line of the Akiak Dash last year, him being interviewed and asked if he planned to do the K300, and he was pretty coy about his plans. And he you know, a couple times I heard him say he wasn't sure if he was going to race this season. So, yeah, I think it's really exciting to see him taking that step to a bigger, longer race.
I wondered what the 20-year-old from Kuithluk was up to.
I've been doing good. Taking care of dogs. That's it. Like feeding dogs and training them and whatnot.
Alexi says he has 19 dogs to feed and get trained up to the pace of a mid-distance race.
I started training in August and then took a break, like a couple weeks break in September because of hunting and for the dogs for a bit.
So how will he fare against the other veteran competitive teams?
I don't actually know. Hmm. It's going to be my first K-200, so I don't actually know.
His training method is still a work in progress. Alexi says he initially started with 3-mile runs and is currently working towards 9 to 15-mile training runs. His goal is to average 9 to 10 miles per hour and get his dogs used to that speed. Last year, Levi and Apollo were Alexi's lead dogs, but he's still figuring out who will lead their team for their first K300. One thing is certain, the young musher loves to race.
It's like therapeutic or whatever, like, you know, you're being out and down.
There isn't any snow on the ground yet, but for mushers and their fans, training and travel plans have already started. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
On Friday, Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson announced a revamped snow removal plan for the upcoming winter season, and he made a big promise.
If this winter is anything like last year, we are ready.
Last December, three consecutive snowstorms hit Anchorage within 2 weeks. The snow trapped hundreds of cars, made bus service unreliable, left sidewalks buried, and forced an unprecedented string of school cancellations. At a news conference, Bronson acknowledged residents' frustrations. After the storms, he says he sat down with the snow removal team to revamp the response plan. That led to adding $1.5 million to his proposed budget for the 2024 snow removal season.
That will be used to expand the snow removal contracts we have in place and allow us more flexibility to get more drivers and contract equipment should we experience an extreme snowfall event.
Bronson says the city's long-standing goal to plow out all city roads within 3.5 days of a significant snowfall remains in place. If 4 inches or more snow falls, then city officials can bring in extra contract workers and tow illegally parked vehicles in the way of plows. If that's not enough to adequately maintain roads, Bronson says he will declare a snow or ice emergency, which opens up more extraordinary powers to clear roadways. Bronson said staffing and equipment shortages were factors in last year's snow response. This year, more equipment is available. And the head of Anchorage Street Maintenance says labor shortages do continue, but not as severely as last year. Last week marked National Wildlife Refuge Week, an annual commemoration to raise awareness and celebrate America's refuge system. Managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, these refuges provide vital habitats to wildlife across the nation. KDLL's Hunter Morrison has more on the system and its importance.
The National Wildlife Refuge System protects over 95 million acres of land and water habitats, the majority of which is in Alaska. There are nearly 600 national wildlife refuges in all 50 states. One of them is the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, which encompasses nearly 2 million acres of mountains, wetlands, and forests across the peninsula. The refuge is home to an array of wildlife, including moose, bears, wolves, eagles, birds, and salmon. Part of the Kenai River watershed, the refuge protects thousands of miles of anadromous waters. It's also a great place for outdoor recreation, making it one of the most visited refuges in the United States.
You know, one of the realities of the Kenai is, you know, for both Alaskans and for visitors to our state, you know, one of the places everybody comes to is the Kenai Peninsula to enjoy everything that's here, including, you know, the refuge.
This is Andy Loringer, refuge manager at the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge.
Alaskans really treasure and are passionate about their outdoor pursuits, and we have just a spectacular place to enjoy the outdoors here and right in our backyards.
Opened in 1941, visitors of the refuge can enjoy fishing, hunting, camping, wildlife viewing, and more. Staff regularly host events for the public, including guided hikes and educational programs. Loringer says that nothing quite compares to the National Wildlife Refuge System globally. The unique network of land and water focuses on the protection of habitats and the wildlife that depend on them.
National wildlife refuges are probably not as well known as, for instance, a national park system in the U.S., but certainly they play just a key role in ensuring, you know, our wonderful wildlife heritage is maintained now and for future generations.
The Kenai National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center in Soldotna is open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. You can learn more about the refuge there or on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service website. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
The Diocese of Fairbanks ordained and installed its seventh bishop, Father Stephen Mekawa, last week. KNOM's Ava White was there and brings us this story.
Hundreds of members of the Catholic Church gathered at the Carlson Center in Fairbanks to welcome Father Mekawa as the diocese's new bishop. The center was adorned with gold decor and a backdrop of Jesus Christ surrounded by angels for the celebration.
Make me pleasing to you in the fulfillment of my duties, and so guide the hearts of people and pastor, that the obedience of the flock may never fail the shepherd, nor the care of the shepherd be lacking for the flock. And may Almighty God bless you, who are gathered here, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
He's the first bishop the Diocese of Fairbanks has had in over a year. Maiyakawa was announced the new bishop by Pope Francis in July. He previously served as the priest of the Dominican province of the Holy Name of Jesus in California and as pastor of the Holy Family Old Cathedral in Anchorage for the last 6 years. The Diocese of Fairbanks is made up of 46 parishes that expand throughout rural Alaska and serves a parish of nearly 12,000 people. Lala Hunt traveled to Fairbanks from Amonic for the bishop's ordination. She serves as a music minister of the Amonic Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Hunt says that rural parishes are different from urban parishes because they have to minister themselves.
Because of the number of priests, numbers are very weak and have dwindled. And so we're having to lead Sunday services, do sacramental prep, funeral services. It entails a lot. And we're very few.
She says the church is looking for more ministers, but they can be hard to find in rural Alaska.
We're always looking for people who can step up to lead.
Bishop Donald Kettler is a former bishop for the Diocese of Fairbanks and attended the ordination. He says when a diocese doesn't have a bishop, especially for an extended period of time, they begin to struggle.
And the bishops have to teach, and they have to bring the sacraments, and they have to govern rural things. So those are the three things the bishop does. So when you don't have one, you kind of flounder around a little bit.
Kettler says he hopes that the installation of a Dominican bishop brings more ministers to the diocese.
And I'm really hoping that maybe some of his confreres will come and help out here, because we need help. We need more people.
Bishop Maiyakawa says that he's looking forward to visiting parishes in the diocese to understand what it's like to be a church in rural Alaska. Right now, he's in what he calls learning mode.
Just have to go out and experience and say hello to people and start meeting people and having new experiences. And I am really looking forward to that.
So far, he says he's visited several communities across the state already. Maiyakawa says that his leadership gives him the ability to connect with communities beyond Alaska.
But we not only have brothers and sisters spread out throughout the diocese, the state of Alaska, North America, we got brothers and sisters around the world.
For the meantime, Maiyakawa says he plans to formulate a deeper understanding of the Diocese of Fairbanks before making any changes.
I think I can't make good decisions without first formulating an understanding. And people have been so gracious in offering their time, their insights, sharing the community and sharing different experiences and all.
After the ordination, Maiyakawa spent hours meeting and praying for attendees.
For KNOM, I'm Ava White.
This summer, the Kenaitse Indian tribe continued its work looking for archaeological significance along the path of the Sterling Highway Bypass Project. As KDLL's Riley Board reports, researchers have been looking for Dena'ina artifacts at the site of the major highway project since 2020.
Michael Bernard, the cultural resource supervisor with the tribe, oversees the cultural workers who operate at the Cooper Landing area archaeological sites. The four cultural observers are employed by the tribe and work alongside the contracted archaeologists any time there's construction or ground-disturbing activities going on.
They're observing, they're monitoring, they're recording data, and being a physical presence there in case anything surfaces that's of particular value for us, and they're also available to halt the project if there's any human remains that are surfaced.
Bernard says because of historic Dena'ina belief systems about not leaving items behind, it's not common to find prehistoric artifacts. During this construction and archaeology season, however, his team did uncover some things.
but we were finding birch bark and charcoal, some stone tools, and like animal bones from time to time. Typically, you're just going to find the depressions in the ground where a house foundation was.
Bernard says it's likely to find something every day because the area is designated as a rich archaeological district. Part of the enjoyment of his work has been discovering things in unexpected places. Uncovered artifacts are studied by the fieldwork archaeologists, then go to either the tribe or the regional native corporation. Bernard says the greatest joy of his work is seeing the tribe grow its own archaeologists. A decade ago, he oversaw a camp for young Kanaitse members to learn about archaeology, studying the work of professionals and participating in surveying and excavation. Now, several of those kids are working on today's site.
The planning that we were hoping to accomplish back then for their potential careers is actually coming to fruition, which is super cool for me. Because a lot of times you don't see your work when you're teaching and instructing young people until they end up getting a job or start working in the field that you were training them in. And for myself, like I say, that's super cool to see those young people now that are, I'm working with them on the project.
Bernard says the archaeological project will carry on for several more years as the construction continues. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Expect mostly good news as corporate earnings reports roll in. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute. We're in the second week of quarterly earnings results. So far, of the S&P 500 companies that have reported, 84% beat expectations. That's according to data firm FactSet. It says that's higher than the 10-year average, and it expects the trend will continue. A Wall Street Journal survey of economists finds the chance of recession has fallen below 50% for the first time since mid-last year. Key reasons include a resilient labor market and stronger-than-expected growth. Rite Aid has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The pharmacy chain is highly indebted and is facing civil lawsuits over opioid painkiller prescriptions it filled over multiple years. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 16th day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:46. It will set again at 7:02 this evening, giving us 10 hours and 16 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 53 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature was 56 degrees, set in 2013 and then again in 2018. And our record low was 25 degrees, set in 1968. Currently 46 degrees. The temperature's been dropping lately. At the airport, they have northwest winds to 6 miles per hour and 4 miles of visibility. Rain is likely, at least in the early afternoon. Cloudy skies today with a high near 40. High near 49, rather. East winds to 10. Chance of rain tonight until 7 or so, followed by scattered showers with mostly cloudy skies overnight and a low of 40, north winds to 5. And rain is likely between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. tomorrow, otherwise mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 49, northwest winds to 10. On Wednesday, sunny skies, high near 49, and they're predicting sunny skies for Thursday, and mostly sunny on Friday and Saturday. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:18 this afternoon here on the east side and be 9.5 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:52 p.m. of minus 5/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 3:51 p.m. and be 15.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:23 p.m. of minus 1.2 feet. And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory today on our east side. East winds to 15 knots, turning to the northeast tonight. 9-foot seas today, coming down to 7 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, north 15 seas to 6 feet. For Wednesday, they are calling for northwest 30, seas coming back up to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 15 today and seas to 4 feet. Variable 10 tonight with seas to 3 feet. And north 15 tomorrow with 3-foot seas. On Wednesday in the Shelikof, west 25, seas coming up to 5 feet. Well, be sure to stay tuned today. Talk of the Rock at 12:30 features Fernando Escobar. He'll be talking to Jared Griffith about the Kodiak Teen Court. Kodiak Teen Court is a program in which youth serve as judges, prosecuting attorneys, and defense attorneys in real criminal cases involving youth under the age of 18. So listen to today's Talk of the Rock and learn about this important program in the community. That's today at 12:30, coming right up. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed. Login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look under the Board of Education tab. The meeting agenda and packet can be viewed at Board Docs. And for more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education, 907-486-7566. Tomorrow, the KMXT Board of Directors will be holding their next regular monthly meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow here at the KMXT building on 620 Egan Way. The meeting is open to the public, and members are always encouraged to attend. For more information, call us up at 907-486-3181. Also tomorrow, the Joint Building Code Review Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. That will be happening at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. On Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 486-9310 with any questions. Don't forget, assembly meetings are also live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live stream notifications. The Kodiak High School Shakespeares presents The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. 4 public performances only. Next Friday, October 20th at 7 p.m., Saturday, October 21st at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday, October 22nd at 2 p.m. Tickets can be found at KodiakShakespeares.ludus.com or at the door. Bring the family to come watch the family classic live at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The 39th annual Stiles Clark Oxen's Masquerade is coming up on October 21st. That's this Saturday. Doors open at 5 p.m., dinner served at 5:30, cash bar until 10 p.m. There will be live music, a live auction, and a silent auction. It's open to everyone 21 and older. Kodiak Elders Coffee Tea Hour is going on. That's happening on Friday from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Koniag Conference Area over on Near Island on 194 Alamac Drive. All Kodiak Elders are invited to join them for coffee, tea, and refreshments. Come enjoy another drawing workshop as well with Janet Bain. Supplies and refreshments are provided, and transportation is available for beneficiaries. For more information or to arrange a ride, contact Elder Services at 907-486-7352.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.